Help all kids learn and grow with PBS Kids. Thank you for supporting your PBS station.
Twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in
and welcome to my library. This splendid old room is the perfect place to spend a quiet night. Or a not so quiet one. These books are filled with stories so astonishing they can't possibly be true. Or can they? Sometimes strange things surprise you when you least expect it. Strange things indeed. Today, we are going to hear some rather odd little stories. Some are true, some are not. Can you tell the fact from the fiction? To begin, let us consider this curious tale.
You know, fossils are really amazing.
The time is Saturday morning. The place, an empty lot at the edge of town.
So the rest of them are still out.
12-year-old John Maurice is on a fossil hunt with his dad.
Now look at this.
They've been searching for hours.
Dad, I'm bored.
I want to get a better look at this.
Dad, you're not going to find any fossils out here.
John, this is the kind of place where you would find a fossil. You've just got to keep looking.
Dad, there's nothing here.
John, be careful. It's a dinosaur bone.
Incredible.
John Maurice has discovered the bones of a prehistoric creature.
What do you think? Is this story fact or is it fiction?
That's a fact, because I found a fossil too at camp on a rock. It was a dead fish.
It's not true because usually you don't find fossils in the city.
It's a fact because you can really find dinosaur bones.
That would never happen to a kid.
I don't think that's true because you have to dig and do a lot of research to find dinosaur bones.
The story you just heard is fact.
Incredible.
John and his father really did make an amazing discovery. Scientists confirmed that they found the fossil remains of a baby nodosaur.
This is it. It's a baby nodosaur.
An armor-plated dinosaur that lived millions of years ago.
Now, prepare yourself for another intriguing tale. Yes, here it is. This is the remarkable story of a young girl named Holly Evans. The place, Hohokus, New Jersey. The date, June 29th, 1999.
June 29, 1999. By David Wisner. Read by Charles Kimbrough. The place is Hohokus, New Jersey. The year is 1999. On May 11th, after months of careful research and planning, Holly Evans launches vegetable seedlings into the sky. On May 18th, the young scientist reports on her experiment. Holly intends to study the effects of extraterrestrial conditions on vegetable growth and development. She expects the seedlings to stay aloft for several weeks before returning to Earth. Her classmates are speechless. The date is June 29th. Shortly after sunrise, a member of the Billings, Montana Moose Lodge, hiking through the Rocky Mountains, makes a startling discovery. Robert Burnaby is in a daze when he returns to camp. All he can say for the next several hours is, turnips, turnips, turnips. All over the country, the skies fill with vegetables. Cucumbers circle Kalamazoo. Lima beans loom over Levittown. Artichokes advance on Anchorage. Parsnips pass by Providence. And broccoli lands with a big bounce in Holly Evans' backyard. In Ottumwa, Iowa, Tony Kramer emerges from his barn and shouts for joy. At last, the blue ribbon at the state fair is mine! By mid-afternoon, all vegetables float safely to the ground, except for the peppers. For some reason, they need a little help. TV news channels broadcast 24-hour coverage of the airborne vegetable event.
Here in Kansas, we have
cauliflower carpets California, spinach blankets Greenwich, and arugula covers Ashtabula. Holly is puzzled. Arugula is not part of her experiment. Vegetables become very big business. Peas from Peoria are shipped down the Mississippi to Mobile in exchange for eggplant. Real estate booms in North Carolina. Avocados bolster Vermont's economy. Potato land is wisely abandoned. The Big Apple is renamed the Big Rutabaga. Arugula, eggplant, avocado, and now rutabaga. As the list of vegetables that Holly did not plant grows longer, she concludes that the giant specimens are not the results of her experiment. More curious than disappointed, Holly asks herself, what happened to my vegetables? And whose broccoli is in my backyard? The place is the ionosphere. On June 29th, the Arcturian star cruiser Alula Borealis was touring its sixth planet in 4 days, and the captain had just pointed out the fjords of Norway off the port side. In the galley, an assistant fry cook accidentally threw out the entire food supply. As their vegetables drifted toward the small blue planet below, everyone on board had the same thought. Where would their supper come from?
Suppose you looked out your window to see an unidentified flying broccoli. Impossible, you say? I suppose it is. But then, you never know. Imagine the size of a worm living in an apple this big. Now, giant fruits and vegetables don't really come from outer space. People work very hard to make them grow.
Growing big pumpkins has been a very enjoyable part of my life. I'm Howard Dill from Windsor, Nova Scotia, where I've grown some of the world's largest pumpkins. Most people grow pumpkins this size, but the ones I grow, it takes six people to carry them. And the average pumpkin may weigh 15 to 20 pounds, but our Atlantic giants will weigh upwards to 800 pounds. You know what? That's a pretty big pumpkin. In the early stages, it's very important to prepare the ground, whether it's with manure or fertilizer, and get ready for the coming season. The most important consideration in growing a giant-sized pumpkin is the seed itself. This is the most important part of the quest for a big pumpkin. Early in the spring, I plant each seed into a jiffy pot. A jiffy pot is a unique pot that gets the seed started in time to get the seed into the ground. When growing large pumpkins, it's very important to feed them regular. I use a special blue powder in my water to make the plants grow bigger. This gives the plants all the vitamins they need. What we do, we dig a hole in order to transplant the plant in the pot into the ground at a specified time. I place many greenhouses over the young plants in order to protect the young plants at the early part of the season from cold and dampness. I also apply some insect dust in the hole around the root of the plant to protect them from insects that could attack the plant. As the season goes on, the plants grow rapidly each day, upwards to perhaps 6 to 8 inches per day. During the mid part of the growing season, I remove the hothouses from the plants. And this could be sometime in June or July when the vines are putting out full flower. There are two kinds of pumpkin flowers, male and female. And it takes both for a pumpkin to grow. I pollinate the female blossom with the male blossom. I choose the flower from the plants which I think will grow the best. I moved pollen from a male flower to a female flower. And of course, the bees will help too. Farming takes a lot of patience and dedication. From start to finish, it would take upwards to 4 months to grow a 500 to 800 pound pumpkin. I give my plants a lot of tender, loving care, and I think that's the most important thing of all. When I stand out in my field to view my giant pumpkins, it gives me great pride and joy to know that I have accomplished this success. My pumpkins are mainly grown for competitions, but also make some lovely pumpkin pies. The most pumpkin pies ever recorded from one of my giant pumpkins was 442. And that's a lot of pumpkin pie.
Giant pumpkins. What in the world will be next? What other impossible things really happened? Well, Agnes Perkins has quite a tale to tell. Is her astonishing story fact? What is it? Fiction.
Our story takes place in 1976 in a small town in the Northwest. At precisely 9:38 p.m., Agnes Perkins' quiet evening at home is interrupted by a phone call.
Hello? Yeah,
Agnes
Marge?
Hears the excited voice of her next-door neighbor, Marge.
Say that again? What?
Marge says she sees a flying saucer, and it's headed for the mall.
A flying saucer? Hold on.
Agnes runs outside to get a closer look. The night air hums with the sound of an approaching engine. Agnes sees lights moving slowly across the sky. Agnes Perkins has seen a flying saucer.
Did Agnes Perkins see a UFO that night? Is her story fact, or is it fiction?
It's probably either a flying saucer, maybe, or a spaceship, or planets, maybe even a satellite.
I don't know if it's true, because we don't know if flying saucers exist or not.
I believe it because I believe that there's life on other planets.
I really do believe in UFOs.
Oh, it was probably an airplane.
I believe it.
Agnes Perkins' UFO story is fiction. Mrs. Perkins did not see a UFO that night, but she did see something. What was it?
It was a flying advertisement, an aircraft spelling out a message in colored lights. Nearby at the mall, shoppers could read its message quite clearly.
Agnes Perkins' flying saucer is easy to explain, but what about all those other stories? Every year, hundreds of people report seeing something odd in the sky. Are all of those UFO sightings fiction, or could some of them be real?
UFOs, unidentified flying objects, are captured in photos and on film.
and are witnessed by ordinary citizens in Gulf Breeze, Florida.
The object was very large, I would say the size of a medium-sized or large airplane.
We could see it well enough that we could see the light and see the portholes and see that there was like a little lighted dome on the top.
Having seen it myself, then I'm convinced now that yes, these exist. But up until that time, I hadn't even thought about UFOs.
There's lots of objects flying around Gulf Breeze, and that doesn't make them alien spacecraft.
If UFOs are not flying saucers, what could they be? Perhaps an experimental helicopter, or a new type of aircraft, an odd cloud formation, or a meteor. Some UFO photos are practical jokes. Take a closer look at this. Special computer analysis reveals that this flying saucer is suspended by a string. Perhaps you can explain this UFO. It's remarkably similar to this squadron of planes. What is it?
The year is 1897. The place is England. Professor John Plumb finds an old library book on one of his shelves. He decides to return it and is told that the book is overdue hundreds of years. Fact or fiction? Fact. The book Professor Plumb found had been borrowed 288 years before. And the fine for this overdue book? And the fine for this overdue book? Let's see, the 10 cents a day times 365 days a year times 288 years. $10,512 and some change. Fortunately, Professor Plumb was excused from paying that fine. If you're overdue for a trip to the library, here are some truly fascinating books you might want to read. But you don't have to take my word for it.
My name is Chanel, and I just read a book about growing vegetable soup. And guess what? It's called Growing Vegetable Soup. A dad and his child plant a vegetable garden. They start with seeds and little sprouts. They give the seeds water. The sun comes out and things start to grow. When the vegetables are ready, they pick them and take them home. They cut the vegetables into tiny pieces and put them in a pot of water. Next comes delicious vegetable soup. Yum! Growing vegetable soup seems really fun. In fact, I like to try it myself. How about you?
Tornadoes made of ketchup. Giant hamburgers dropping on people's heads. What's the world coming to? Find out in this book, Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs. Chew and Swallow is a weird town. It has everything except food stores. Of course, the people don't really need food stores. Every kind of food you can imagine falls from the sky. It rains soup. It snows mashed potatoes. Every time you turn the page, there's something funny and unexpected. I got this book when I was 6 years old, and it's been one of my favorites ever since. This is Sam Gorney signing off.
Come with me on a strange trip into the past. How do we get there? By reading this book, Time Train. Some school kids are taking a trip to Dinosaur National Monument. They get on a train in New York. Some very odd things start to happen while they're on the train. They see some soldiers from the Civil War. Are those really buffalo in Ohio? When they reach their destination, things get even more strange. Is that a real dinosaur? Was the whole story fact or fiction? That's what you'll have to decide. I'm Nathan Chang recommending that you read Time Train.
Today we have heard some incredible stories. Some were fact, some were fiction, and some were science fiction. But all of them were really strange. And now, it's time for one final tale. The time is midnight. And the place, a room just like this. There is a sound, a strange whirring noise. Mysteriously, the room fills with an eerie red glow. It is the unmistakable presence of a flying saucer hovering overhead. The whole house begins to rumble. The noise gets louder and louder. Chattering alien voices come closer and closer. Is this story fact or is it fiction? Why, it's fiction, of course. I'll see you next time. Today's Reading Rainbow books are June 29th, 1999, by David Wisner, published by Clarion Books, a Houghton Mifflin Company imprint. Growing Vegetable Soup, written and illustrated by Lois Ehlert, published by Harcourt Brace Jovanovich Incorporated. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, written by Judy Barrett and drawn by Ron Barrett, published by Athenaeum Publishers, an imprint of Macmillan Publishing Company. Time Train by Paul Fleischman. Illustrations by Claire Ewart, a Charlotte Zolotow book.